gaggle of geese. More fun than a room full of wombats. Able to reach huge audiences with a single broadcast. Yes, it's the Outdoor Journal Radio Show. And now, another exciting episode in the adventures of Outdoor Journal Radio.
Welcome to the show, everybody, and how exciting today's program is going to be on so many levels.
You're pumped, aren't you?
I'm pumped. First of all, there's a couple of stories that I'm just absolutely dying to chew on here in a moment. But more importantly, a very special friend of ours is going to be on the program a little later on. He was also instrumental in the products that we know today as the Fishing Canada Show, as well as Outdoor Journal Television and Outdoor Journal Radio.
Come on now.
And Correct. Now he comes Correct. Full circle. He's going to be a guest on Outdoor Journal Radio, the podcast.
Give me a hell yeah.
And if you're a fan of Roland Martin's show, he even works on Roland Martin's fishing show.
Does he work on that show, I dare say he is that show.
Yeah. So.
Come on now.
Big name and in our industry as far as fishing shows, outdoor shows, and a very good, close, personal friend of ours. So we're excited, as you can tell, he's coming on. But there's so much of this show. We're going to need a two and a half hour version of this for sure today.
Yes.
So we'll blow right through
By the way, our guest, just for people to wait, our guest has got some very interesting news in tourism and just in tourism for fishermen, for hunters, for families, for everybody,
which is the main reason he's on the show today. He's promoting a new business of his, and I think you're all going to be super excited about it. And
pretty cool idea.
It's such a great idea that's way overdue mm-hmm. as far as I'm concerned. Before we get to any of that, I want to remind everybody, Fishing Canada episodes, the new ones are on TV, as we say right now, season 38. Not sure what episode we're on in terms of numbers, because it's all a big blur to us.
Yes.
But you do want to make sure you catch them while they are fresh. So later on in the year, when you're saying, when's the new show's coming on? We don't have to say, well, they aired already. What are you waiting for? Anyway, it's all happening on Global Television Network, coast to coast to coast, 8 a.m., except on the left coast, 10:30 a.m. there. Of course, once they're done with the global preview, debut each week, they go on Sportsman's Channel in Canada and WFN World Fishing Network in the U.S. Look for times in your particular location. For those of you, especially south of the border, you can find out we air four times a week on WFN. So if you don't catch the first one, you got three other opportunities before the new episode comes up. And then once that happens, that episode goes on YouTube.
Following Monday, after the Saturday, like that. And then the article for that will come out on Tuesday on fishingcanada.com, too. So,
and the hotspot on Wednesday.
And hotspot on Wednesday. Sorry, I forgot about that.
Yep.
There you go.
Are you serious?
So the new series, I got a text from Chris Hockley, our buddy Chris Hockley.
Yeah. Yes.
He says, new show. He's trying to figure out, because everybody's talking about this new show. There's a new look to it. There's a new feel to it. There's something different about it, but they can't really tell, right? So he throws these things out. He says, more drone work, including in the boat. He's pretty well right about, you know, but maybe not so much in the boat, but yeah. Lens change in some shots. Do you use a different lens, Volva? Yes, he got that right. 24 frames per second for cinematic look, maybe?
Wow.
No. Okay. A couple of scripting changes. Am I warming any of these? Chris, you're pretty much on a lot of them, buddy, just to let you know. So good eye for seeing it. So people are noticing the new look of our show, and we're happy that they are.
Yeah,
so.
Not to take up a whole lot of time on this, because we do want to get on with the show, but we pride ourselves in not being happy at any point with what we produce. And what I mean by that is that we're continually looking for ways to up the ante, to change the game, to whatever you want to call it. We never sit back on our laurels, although some people might. I mean, I think the Fishing Canada Show has accomplished more than anybody in the industry would have ever dreamed of. So it's pretty easy sometimes to get into that bit of a lull, but we don't hear. Every year we try and have at least one or two items that are totally new. And this year, I think we've kind of hit the pinnacle.
It's a nice feel to the show. We're all very proud of it for sure from, you know, start to finish. So
if you haven't caught it, just tune in to Global Television Network Saturday mornings for those of you in Canada. In the U.S., once again, look for the airings in your local listing on WFN and Sportsman's Channel as well.
Come on now.
All right. Listener feedback, Mr. Bowman. What do we got?
Listener feedback from Real, spelled R-E-E-L, Fish and Real. Real Relaxin' via Apple Podcasts. Love the banter between you two. Also, enjoy the Q&A sessions. I would like to hear more stories on Manitoba, only because I'm from that province. And P.S., I'm also a Party Marty fan.
Ah, yes! Party Marty! Finally, somebody else. I'm not the only insane person on the planet. Party Marty, for those of you who don't know, is a guy who just basically teaches you how to play guitar songs, not music, not learning anything about music. He just has a guitar and he sits there and he shows you how to play a simple version of these really iconic songs, the ones that are really difficult. Yep. You know, Stairway to Heaven and all of these.
Really?
Oh, he does all, and he does them in like three or four. Everything he does is G, C, and D.
Nice.
He throws in the odd F.
Have you ever heard Roxanne? Does he do Roxanne
he
by
does
the Police?
Anything.
Really?
I'm telling you.
I got to see that one.
I'm telling you.
That's got the craziest chords in reality.
And he tells you right off the bat, you know, this is not talent here. I mean, this is breaking it down as simple as you can get
it. I love it.
But if you want to play these songs in your group or at a party, that's why he calls himself Marty Party, or Party Marty, you got to check it out. So anyways, we're way off topic already.
Hey, Real Relaxin' though. It's good.
So the Q&A.
It means he's listening, right?
Yeah, Party, for sure.
Real Relaxin' means he's listening because he knows you're a fan.
So Real Relaxin', the truth of the matter is we haven't done a lot in Manitoba. Here's what happens in this industry. It's very simple. And I don't know whether we've come clean in the past or not, but we'll come clean now.
Oh, my.
Thank you. Part of the business model in not just ours, but all television fishing shows is that you have to figure out how to monetize each and every episode. A lot of our episodes are monetized by a jurisdiction, meaning that a province or a tourism group or a economic development office somewhere says, hey, we got to have the Fishing Canada guys here because it seems like when they come and shoot an episode here, things happen, right? And so there was a point in our lives where Manitoba wanted it all. And for a number of years, we were shooting in Manitoba. It seemed like every second episode, we were depicting scenes and locations in Manitoba. And then some of the other provinces started looking at it and saying, hey, wait a minute, how can we get on board too? And of course, Ontario was one that comes to mind, BC, New Brunswick and Nova Scotia, Newfoundland. And so it's very cyclical. What's going to happen eventually? And Manitoba, by the way, kind of backed off at that point.
Yeah, there was a point they just sort of backed right off and never came back.
Do you remember the last time we worked with them, who their guy was?
Brad guy?
Maximus.
Oh, right.
Million.
Yeah. Maximus Million.
Maximus Million was his name.
Wow.
And he worked for Travel Manitoba.
Yeah.
And anyways.
It's too bad. We got to get back there. I mean, we'd love to get back there. Oh, sure, man. It's a great province for great fishing. There's no doubt about it. So.
But that's the long and short of it. We just have not had a relationship. And not only have we not had, but, you know, there's a finite amount of episodes that we can produce over the course of the season. And when they're all booked with other areas and provinces, then obviously there's no room for anybody else. So if you're listening, Manitoba, if you're listening and you're from Manitoba and need to have Manitoba back in the game, reach out to us.
Yeah. Come on now.
Well, actually, Real, why don't you, a Real Relaxin', why don't you contact your Manitoba Tourism Board or whoever's in charge these days there and tell them, hey, it's high time we had the Fishing Canada boys back in town. We'll come back for sure.
Yeah, people are always asking, you guys have so many Ontario shows now. Ontario shows. Well, Ontario is one of our partners. Yeah. They decided to partner up with us. They're smart. So there you go. That's an explanation.
The podcast network. A lot of people may not be aware of the fact that this very show, Outdoor Journal Radio Podcast, is also a network. And underneath that network, or within that network, we have a number of titles. One of those titles is this one that you see behind me, Under the Canopy, by our good friend Jerry Ouellette, former Minister of Natural Resources here in Ontario, actually. And then he got into this whole chaga and fungi and all of these great organic items that are available to us out in nature. And he got into identifying them all and whatnot. And we brought him on as a host for a podcast, and it's doing extremely well. This week or this month or whatever the case may be, what we're highlighting, month. Right? I never know. It's always this uncomfortable.
Week. Every week, every Monday, he comes out.
So every week, apparently every week now. And it's actually every day we have a different one coming out.
Right. Yeah.
Every day with a different title. But anyways, this week we're highlighting the podcast about maple syrup. Episode number 30 for Jerry is all about maple syrup. And who doesn't like maple syrup?
I love good maple syrup. Don't be fooled. Jerry's going to be talking about good maple syrup. Don't buy that junk that you see in the grocery stores for $4 a bottle or something like that. Spend the bucks on good maple syrup.
So money.
You know, pure maple syrup. Yeah, it's going to cost you for sure.
It's like wine.
It's
you
like
get
wine.
What you pay for.
You get what you pay for with maple syrup.
Right? This is very similar to wine because wine, most of the good wines are either first run or second press wines. And then when you get into the cheap wines, they're third, fourth, and even fifth runs of wine.
Like that old XXX and 410 we used to drink in high school back in the day. Not that I did that, but yeah, anyways, I remember that stuff.
It's episode 30, Under the Canopy, maple syrup. It's on as we speak.
That's interesting stuff. You know, how to tap maple trees, stuff like that. That's interesting. It's an art.
The news, Mr. Bowman.
Oh, here's a good one here. This is finally, we're getting a little bit of penalty here. Listen to this. Chinook poachers fined $96,000.
Whoa, here in Canada?
In Canada. A little bit farther west of us. Two commercial fishers are on the hook for nearly $100,000 after selling almost twice their legal limit of Chinook salmon in the summer of 2018 on two separate occasions. Adam Monroe and his skipper, Silas Levesque, offloaded hundreds more fish for sale in Prince Rupert.
BC, that's Prince Rupert, BC.
They appealed the original judgments against them, but the Supreme Court Justice Miriam Mainsville dismissed the appeal. And this is good. It goes on. This is getting pretty good. She says she was not convinced by their arguments, including attempts to use the French language version of the Fisheries Act and a debate over translation to justify their actions.
No, hang on for a minute. One of the accused, hang on, let me just see.
He's
here.
Not the skipper, though.
One of the accused is Adam Moore.
Adam Monroe.
So now I could understand maybe how Silas Levesque might try an attempt to use the French language.
He's got a French name
version.
For sure.
So, but the other guy, he doesn't have a leg to stand on.
He's not the skipper, right? He just, I don't know. I'm not sure what's going on. I don't know the rules. I'm just pulling in the fish for Monsieur Levesque.
That's maybe. I wonder what it was in the French language that made that.
Well, obviously, we went through it with a fine-tooth comb to try and get away from these $96,000 worth of fines. You know what I mean? He dug deep into the French version of the Fisheries Act.
It doesn't really say how much weight they had, eh? How much they got caught with.
Double? Did it say double, Dean? Was it double?
Yeah, it was double.
Whatever their quota would have been, because I'm assuming
this is a commercial license that they're working on, right? So whatever they would normally have available to them under their commercial license, they were... double. So it wasn't even a case where you could say, how did that extra fish get? I got caught one time for that, by the way. How'd that extra fish get caught, get up there in the nets? No, this is double. So, you know, some of these licenses would have 4,000 and 5,000 pounds.
I was going to say, at a $96,000 fine, you're talking thousands of pounds.
Oh, yeah.
Over. Right?
Oh, yeah.
You know, just
sure.
a guess, but probably.
For sure. Anyways, Justice Miriam Masonville said, no, you didn't.
Mm-hmm. You did.
The fact that you may or may not have understood the way the act was written and you interpreted in a different language, it does not just... And besides, how do you interpret twice the weight? I mean, I can understand a few pounds. Say, I misunderstood. We're talking twice the weight.
Yeah, there's, so. I mean, there, obviously in any fisheries act, if you look at all, when we go to our rules and regulations here in Ontario, we see you are allowed six fish with your full license. You're allowed four or two with your conservation. It's very explicit as to numbers. Now, that's not the numbers these guys are working with as far as small numbers compared to big numbers. It doesn't matter. It's written in the in these on paper. It's written. Right?
I will guarantee you. $96,000 later, let's call it $100,000 just for the sake of arguing. $100,000 later, I think they now understand the language clearly.
Wonder if there was, did you hear, Dean, if there was anything else, the boats taken away?
No, I didn't hear anything.
The license was taken away for 5 years and stuff.
No, it has to be.
It has to be.
Well, I think their license would have been taken away.
It would have been taken, right? Because this happened in 2018. I can't believe it took that long anyways.
Oh, wow.
But they've probably been suspended since then.
The courts are ridiculously backed up.
Yeah.
Ridiculously backed up. And this is case in point, right?
The jails, everything. The jails are overfilled.
Anyways, I don't think there's any need to worry about misinterpreting anything now by these two gentlemen. Their negligence and lack of due diligence is what they got charged with. So
good
on you, Madam Justice, to thing right. This week's fan question comes to us from Randy Jones in Alberta, Canada.
We got Alberta and we got Manitoba today.
Holy moly.
Look at us go, kid.
Randy submitted via email. That would be info@fishingcanada.com. info@fishingcanada.com.
Come on now.
And Randy's query is, what is the best each of you individually and as a team have done in a fishing tournament in terms of placing and prize? So I'm going to go with... I don't want to have to go through 10 or 12 or 15 years of tournament fishing. So I'm going to assume you want highlights from our fishing tournament careers, both on our own and when we were together. That's the way we're going to read it.
Yeah.
Do you want to lead the way?
On my own, my biggest payout was a second in the Canadian Classic. And I hate talking about it because I wanted first and I had the fish on for first and blah, blah, blah.
You should have had first, damn it.
So I won back then. It was like 10, 15 grand or something, which was a nice prize for sure. But it was, certainly wasn't the top prize because the top prize was like 70 grand with all that kind of stuff. But when I combined that one, so when Ange and I met, before that, I fished with Mike Burse, and Mike and I, in all of our tournaments, including the classics, like that one in the second place, we would split even on everything, et cetera, et cetera. So Mikey won the classic, I think a couple of years after that, and he won a boat, motor, trailer, and 10 grand or whatever that got. So I got a truck out of that deal. So that was a pretty good prize payout for that, for individual. But that's about the highest I've ever...
Where was that? Got.
That classic was in... Kingston, and the one I got second was in Midland.
I remember that because you should have won that Midland.
Oh, dude. I talked about somebody the other day. I still see the fish. I had a 3.5 pounder. I see him coming through clear water, largemouth. I had a jig, and he opened his mouth, and my jig just came flying back at me. And I just said, oh, my God, that thing just cost me about 60 grand. And sure as shit, I got back, and it cost me about 60 grand.
It's funny because back then, of course, we were fishing against each other on a weekly basis. But, you know, there was a different camaraderie back then between anglers. And when that happened, I think we all collectively went, oh, my God. Because if there was anybody that should have won that event that deserved to win the event was Dodo Head here for Mr. Hook set, who obviously didn't set the hook.
Yeah, obviously. Yeah, I slacked off a little bit, but
together.
I was thinking that again back to Pro Bass, you and I and Mike and Reno all split up. Normally it was Mike and I against Dan's and Reno. Yeah. You know, we always split up. So one weekend we had two tournaments on a weekend, different tournament Saturday and Sunday. And Reno and I fished Saturday, and then Ange and I fished Sunday. And then they all, Mike and Reno and Mike and Ange teamed up too. And I know we got big fish on each of those
each
events.
Day.
Each event of that, we got big fish. So that was a nice little payout and the trophies and all that. And I can't remember how we placed.
I was going to say the same thing. I totally
placed pretty good. I think we got top tens. I can't remember how high it was, but with those big fish, because I remember one of them was over 5 pounds. Yeah. And then that's the same tournament where we come back and you're we come back to your truck and boat trailer to put the boat on your bass boat on the trailer, and your trailer was gone. Somebody stole it.
Exactly.
So we lost money on that deal.
For me, a couple stand out too. The very first Tri-Lakes tournament here in Ontario, which was, correct me if I'm wrong.
Balsam, Mitchell, Balsam, and Connell.
Well, you were supposed to correct me if I was wrong. You didn't even give me a chance on that.
I remember the tournaments. I still remember that. See?
So it was the at the time, the big tournament, because it had three bodies of water that were wide open. They've since changed that now. They try and keep anglers on one body of water. But back then, we could literally run hundreds of miles to our fishing grounds. And it was the first one, if I recall, in the Pro Bass series. And I don't know for sure, but it might have been the biggest comeback in Canadian tournament history, because Reno and I were in 15th place, and that's when we first officially met with you and Mike Burris, right?
Yeah.
Because we were dejected. We were in 15th place, and we were coming off the water on that Saturday's event, and we were in the doldrums. And as we're coming off the water, Pete and Mike had already pulled their boat up, and they were sitting on a rickety old picnic table right at the launch ramp having a beer. And as we're getting our boat out of the water, they say, "Hey, boys, come on over and have a beer." And we said, "Yeah, sure." And so we pulled the boat up and went and sat down with them, had a beer, and we started, you know, crying the blues about our day, and they were crying the blues about their day. But the one thing I'll never forget, and I still say it might have been instrumental in what happened the next day. So we're in 15th position, but not just 15th position. We're pretty much out there. I think we had 13 and change. We're under 14 pounds. First place was 19 and change after the first day. And generally in a tournament, when there's that much difference, you're pretty, pretty much toast, right?
Yeah.
Anyways, Pete and Mike were, for whatever reason, could have been the beer, might have been the beer, encouraged us, saying, "Hey, you know what? You're not out of it. We're out of it, but you're not out of it. And all you have to have is a really good day." And I remember them saying, if the leader has 19 and change today, why can't you have 19 and change tomorrow? And he goes down, they go down to 13 on their day. So kind of made sense a little bit. Regardless, to say, we set out the next day and we just blew the doors off everybody and won that tournament, the first ever Tri-Lake tournament.
I remember that. Still remember that well.
What a moment in our time. And then the second highlight for me was a big second place finish. I still say we were first, but at that time we didn't think about things. But it was an event on Lake Simcoe where Peter and Mike and Reno and I, by now we had developed a friendship on tournaments and stuff. And we used to, it wasn't unusual for us to go out and kind of pre-fish information back and forth the day before. It was perfectly legal.
Yeah, perfectly legal, exactly.
So we would, you know, on Thursday night or on Friday night, wherever we could get together, we'd exchange information. And
which is really nice, just to let you guys know, if you're fishing in tournaments and you have some buddies like that, it's really nice, especially if you don't have anything going in. You say, "God, guys, is there anything you can give us? Just a little bit of something a guy can give you." You never know how much, you know, how well that could work for you. So just keep that in mind.
So lo and behold, as it turned out, we were both on our first location. We were both going there because that was the biggest area that we had found that had fish. And so, which is not unusual, by the way. So blast off comes and we find ourselves at this spot. Both boats converged on the spot, but there was a local boat anchored up on the spot when we got there. And we know it's a local boat. It's a little tin boat with three guys in it, if I'm not mistaken. Anyways, but they knew there was a tournament going on. They might have even been there because there was a tournament going on. I don't know. But they were anchored up on our number one spot. We felt that this spot would have enough fish for both days, for both boats. That's how good it was. Anyways, we get there just as these guys are pulling in four-pounders left and right, all three of them. There was a triple header going on when we came off plane. That's how good the spot was. And they had live bait. They had leeches, if I'm not mistaken.
I was going to mention. If you didn't mention it, I was going to mention it because those leeches kicked our asses.
And they didn't mind showing the leeches to us, too.
The leeches, the fish. Hey, boys, look at that 4-pounder.
That'll look good in your boat, wouldn't it? Don't you wish you were using some of these? And boom, there they go. Another 3 triple headers, 4-pounders.
Man. Left around,
to the point where I think we were there for about an hour. And we couldn't handle the pressure. That's a case of not being able to handle the pressure, as far as I'm concerned, in tournament fishing. We just couldn't
but
deal.
But they were annihilating the population there anyways. You know what I mean? Like, wow, they're just beating this thing up to a shred. Throwing back 3-pounders so they can keep their 4-pounders. You know what I mean? So it's like, wow.
Now, Pete's partner, Mikey, had found a spot in pre-fishing that was kind of marginal, but it was the only other thing that we had, any of us had. But it was very hard to find at that time. GPS units were brand new. No, we didn't have GPS. We had no GPS. We navigated by maps, big maps in the boat, right? So anyways, so trying to find it was extremely difficult. But at this point, we were so screwed up. We were mentally out of it. Right. We had nothing left to fight for. So we decided, let's go and look for this thing.
I'll tell you how we found that, because I remember this as plain as day. So we went, Mike and I had this in our heads where it was on our map. So we said, OK, guys, here's what we're looking for, blah, blah, blah. So then we'd run our fish finders just on the flasher screen. I said, all you got to do is look for 8 to 12 feet of water, guys. Go keep going. We'll do a big grid here. We'll just do grids, like a tic-tac-toe grids and all that kind of stuff. And when whoever finds it, yell at the other guy, because we're going to be there. And I said, and that's the way we found it.
And that's what happened. So we finally find it. It's in the middle of 65 feet of water. So it was very difficult. And the only thing that was there was this one little rising little island that topped out at 12 or 13 feet, I believe, at the time. Mm-hmm. Anyways, we finally find it. It's now noon and our day's pretty much shot, but at least we found something that we could fish. And oh my God, it was just
Reno Lord. Put on a clinic. That's all I can say is Reno put on a clinic with us. It was everything you weren't supposed to do in smallmouth fishing. He did it, God, and he killed him on it.
He killed him. And of course we watched them do it, and we got on board pretty quick. So we weighed in that day, and we were first and second. And third was not that far behind, but far enough behind that, to me, it was no big deal.
Yeah.
We should win this. The only thing that was in dispute, as far as the four of us were concerned, was which one of us was going to end up first and which one was going to end up second, because we were going out to that spot again, obviously.
Yeah.
A spot, by the way, that, unlike most fishing spots and locations today, was like, there is no way that anybody could really find it. Let's put it that way. Unless they had stumbled onto it.
I don't think the map even showed it, did
it? No,
it wasn't. We found it. Yeah.
I don't even know how Mike found it, to be honest
with you. Fish finder, probably just run us.
Anyways, we head out there the next day, and oh my God, it was just, because now we have the whole day, right? It was just glorious. It was absolutely, and all day long, you know, we're pulling in these 3.5-4 pound fish and culling them. You know, by 10 o'clock, we were dumping out fish left and right. You couldn't get, there wasn't enough time to cull. It got to a point where one guy became the culler. We did like an hour each on the culling detail. But anyways, and before we left, I remember saying, guys, it's just a question now of who's first and who's second, because we kind of estimated our weights were in that 18 pound area, which at the time on that lake was pretty damn good.
Isn't that funny? Hey, you hear that now? That's 3 fish on that lake now.
And you probably can imagine what the rest of the story was. The third place team did pull off a Hail Mary pass. We don't know quite how, although later in life we had some ideas how, but regardless, we were second and third, not first and second.
Yeah.
And I remember that one so clearly.
It was a memorable tournament for sure.
My
it was
God.
Fun. It was just a fun day, a fun 2 days on the water.
Yeah, that was a blast. And we learned a lot from that day too. You know, we learned that that working with others and making the tournament more about learning how to fish, learning how to find locations, learning all of that was far more important than chasing the ring, you know, chasing that ring for free. Because if you take care of all those other things, chasing the ring becomes a very real possibility. And
You taught me the one thing that I learned in that tournament, the biggest thing that still stays in my head to this day, and I remember as plain as day. Do you know what it is? You think you remember?
Well, doing anything less?
No.
Dragging?
No, it's nothing to do with that.
That you don't have to have light tackle?
No, nothing to do with that. It's about fish attitude and weather. Do you remember anything about that?
Oh, God, no.
So that Saturday, as we're sitting in our first and second place, the thunderstorms that came through that night were ridiculous. It was the most loud cloud like that. And I got up the next morning, and that's all I thought of. How does it affect the fish? And I said to Ange, I says, dude, what are we going to do out here? He said, what do you mean? I said, you saw what was going on last night. He says, don't worry about that. That's nothing. And sure as hell,
that was not. And you know why I said that? You know what? What I really believe we were going to have a better day on Sunday than we even did on Saturday, which we did. But you're right. There was a horrendous storm move through. Brutal. I mean, it was. It woke you up. Yeah. It woke you up in the middle of the night. The reason I was convinced that they were going to be there is they had no choice. This place was so isolated in the middle of a big lake with so much deep water.
Yeah.
I was thinking, in my head, all we're going to have to do is go from fishing the very crest, which we did the first day.
Yeah.
We're just going to have to drop off the sides a little bit. And where are they going to go? Out in the ocean? There. They're not going to go in the ocean. They're going to hunker around this mound.
Yeah. Right? I wasn't worried about them leaving. I was worried about their attitude, if they were going to bite or not. That's the only thing I was worried about. And man, they bit the next day. It was different, but they did bite, man.
What a great experience. Yeah.
Good journey.
There you go, Randy. Hopefully that answers your question. For the rest of you out there that would like to join in the fun, just make sure you send a message out to info@fishingcanada.com. And Dean, our dancing machine, thank you, will make sure that you get in the queue.
Or Facebook or Instagram as well on our socials. Do we get many from that, Dean, or no?
We have been lately, actually.
Okay, good. There you go. Three ways of doing it.
Hi, everybody. It's Toronto Sportsman Show time, and the entire Fishing Canada Outdoor Journal podcast crew is going to be there.
That's right. We'll be in-house hosting live podcasts, interacting with listeners, and fielding questions from you, our audience, all weekend long.
You can get 15% off your admission price by purchasing through the link on fishingcanada.com.
Spend a weekend with us at Canada's premier event for outdoor enthusiasts, the Toronto Sportsman Show.
Now, I'm saying, the humble goldfish, everyone's favorite aquatic pet. It's small, easy to care for. What's there not to love?
Even the cat may be mesmerized by the color and movements of your aquarium friends. Goldfish are great at home, but don't let them loose.
Releasing goldfish or other domestic aquatic pets or plants into natural environments is harmful to both your pet and the planet.
Goldfish disrupt ecosystems by outcompeting native species for food and resources in degraded habitats. They contribute to algae blooms, they kill aquatic wildlife, and pass viruses and diseases contracted in aquariums to wild fish.
They could even live up to 40 years and grow as big as a football. Anglers, this is where you come in. If you find a goldfish at your local fishing spot, report it to the invading species hotline or go online to eddmaps.com.
Remember to never dump your live bait into the water and risk spreading other aquatic invaders. Keep our lakes free from invaders and don't let them loose.
Back in 2016, Frank and I had a vision to amass the single largest database of muskie angling education material anywhere in the world.
Our dream was to harness the knowledge of this amazing community and share it with passionate anglers just like you.
Thus, the Ugly Pike podcast was born and quickly grew to become one of the top fishing podcasts in North America.
Step into the world of angling adventures and embrace the thrill of the catch with the Ugly Pike podcast. Join us on our quest to understand what makes us different as anglers and to uncover what it takes to go after the infamous fish of 10,000 casts.
The Ugly Pike podcast isn't just about fishing. It's about creating a tight-knit community of passionate anglers who share the same love for the sport. Through laughter, through camaraderie, and an unwavering spirit of adventure, this podcast will bring people together.
Subscribe now and never miss a moment of our angling adventures. Tight lines, everyone.
Find Ugly Pike now on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever else you get your podcasts.
All right, the big moment is upon us.
Well, you're We're excited for our favorite you. Guest of I told the, you. 24 so far, right?
I can't remember when I've been more excited for a guest. Joining us now is one of the, and I'll say forefathers, and I'll explain that in a moment, of the Fishing Canada show. We've known this gentleman for the better part of our adult lives, worked with him on most of the, throughout most of that journey. He is one of the first editors of the Fishing Canada show, an animator, first animator of the Fishing Canada logo.
Creator of the logo. Yeah.
And now he is the owner, co-owner of affordable glamping luxury called the Maynooth Station Lodge. Ricky, how you doing, brother?
Hey, it's good to see you guys again. You I just too. Wanted, for the record, hello, I'm up there. Hi. I just want to point out that logo. I designed that logo.
That's right. That's what we were just saying. Well, so the Fishing Canada logo right there. That baby that everybody sees.
Yeah, and Outdoor Journal Radio. Absolutely.
Oh, my God. Really? Good man.
Yeah, Outdoor Journal Radio. Rick and I collaborated on that one, on that entire process with the book. Remember in the clay bed?
That was a process.
Yep, that was real clay that Rick laid out in a big box, a sandbox. Yeah. And then we kind of had to figure out how to get it to move. It was crazy.
Our kitty litter and our hair dryers to blow the desert sand.
Exactly.
How would that, Ricky, very quickly, how would that compare to nowadays? Would that be an easy logo to build nowadays with all the fancy computing?
You couldn't compare. We were, Angelo and I, we were doing some pretty innovative things back then on floppy disks and Amiga computers. It was, you can't even compare it. I could literally take my phone out right now and probably recreate that whole thing between what phones can do AI. And probably do it in an afternoon. By the end of the call today.
but back then, it's not like we were completely.
Oh my God! When we first saw it, you guys said, "Guys, okay, everybody, come on here, take a look at this." And we're all looking and saying, "What the hell just happened?"
I remember sitting in that big Quonset hut we had back at the property,
the old dome,
thinking, "Okay, how do we do this?" And we literally came up with all of that technique over an evening, if I'm not mistaken, after work.
One night. And for everyone watching, if you go to your YouTube page, you've got the Outdoor Journal shows on there, and they can see for themselves. And it holds up well. I've watched them.
Yeah.
Yeah, it does hold up well. Yeah, and the leaves coming in and all that. That was man. That was awesome.
Anyways, there's a million things we need to talk about. Before we get into that, at some point, we're going to talk about this new venture, which is, I guess, the real reason you're here, maybe for everybody else, but not for me. For me, I just want to walk down memory lane with you, buddy. But you've got a new business called the Maynooth Station Lodge, which I'm really excited about. I was privy to some of this way back when you were just conceptualizing it and thought it was great then. And I think it's even better now. So I want to make sure we leave enough time for that. But I do want to walk down memory lane. And we're probably going to have some differences of opinion as to what, when, and where. There's not a whole lot of documentation that would substantiate most of what we're about to talk about. But from my perspective, and correct me when I'm wrong, not if I'm wrong, when I go offline.
Whoa, Ricky.
So.
Wow. Did everybody get a timestamp on that? Angelo Viola admitted he might be wrong.
You were here as an editor prior to our existing Joe Gorskowski editor, who's been here forever, since the beginning of time. But you actually preceded him as the editor on the Fishing Canada show, did you not? Or not?
As a matter of fact, yes, that's right.
Okay. And correct me if I'm wrong. What happened was you two flip-flopped positions with another company. Am I right? And that other company is Creasy Video something or other.
I was working for reseller at the time. I was doing tech sales. Yeah.
Okay. So somebody, you went there. Joe came here. That's how I remember it.
That might have been it.
Okay. All right. Because it's been bugging me. I've been trying to see if I could remember it accurately, but that's what happened. Rick went there, and in turn, and he went there to replace Joe, and Joe came and replaced him.
Yeah, okay. So
that's, no, the other way around. Yeah, Joe replaced me.
Now, also, correct me if I'm wrong. I first met you prior to any of that happening. I met you.
Wow, we're going long,
going deep, buddy.
I remember this day. Are you going to tell me about my living room in Mississauga?
On a dreary, I want to say January, February day, I drove to Mississauga to meet you because you were working on some cutting edge stuff on something called the Omega Toaster.
Yeah.
Am I right?
Amiga. But Amiga. Yeah, that's exactly
tell us about that.
Well, I mean, we talk about floppy disks and the early days. I mean, I was doing some pretty innovative stuff with the Amiga and 3D animation, which really wasn't a thing. I was running a film festival actually at the time.
That's it.
Focused on computer animation, and one of my films ended up being accepted into another film festival in Ottawa, which is actually the Museum of Science and Technology. They had a computer animation festival, and they invited me to come up to Ottawa to present one of my films. So fun fact, if you go to the National Archives of Canada and type my name in, gosh, Ange, that would have been...
What was that?
1992, maybe. Yeah, I'm in the National Archives, my film Two Bits. And so that sort of buzz, and I was putting out a newsletter, and this was, of course, before the days of the internet. Somehow we connected. It might have been my newsletter I sent out. I don't know. And you made the connection. And Angelo, to your credit, you saw something. I'm not saying I'm particularly Pixar talented, but you saw something that applied to the work that you wanted to do.
Right.
And again, no one was really doing it.
No,
so
no.
Here is you with this vision of what the Fish and Canada show with some of the sonar animations we wanted to do.
And
the Magavision project and all these things
Magavision.
No words. And then I'm here with an award-winning animator with time on my hands, and we connected, and it was just that was 19, let's call it 92. Wow.
Magavision. I forgot about that one, buddy. Holy mackerel. Remember that?
Oh God, do I remember that? Yeah.
And I remember driving up and finding you, your apartment, and coming up, and we had hot peanut butter cookies out of the oven, if I'm not mistaken.
Damn,
that's right.
That's good.
We talked about our futures together, and we talked about my vision of what I wanted to see in our industry, of all places, in the fishing show television business. I wanted to see animation. I wanted to see the wonderful things that you were doing, and to see how we could collaborate and bring them in.
How old is our YouTube? How far back does our YouTube? Dean, do you know, or anybody, do you know how far back our YouTube goes? Does it go way back to start with Rick's first animations or anything like that?
I don't.
Our YouTube station? Channel?
We should try and put something on there that show the very first of it, because I'm picturing those logos and everything and the animation coming in, and it was so cool. Back then it was cutting edge. Now
I think we have the caveman one. Is that the one you're talking about?
Oh, the caveman animation.
That's
part of
it. That's on YouTube. Yeah.
Okay.
That's a great one.
On Fishing Canada.
Yeah.
So there you go, folks. Go on to Fishing Canada YouTube and check out something like that. It's that's what Ricky's work was. It's pretty good, man. It's good. It was really good.
I think we should bring that back. I love that one.
I know.
Oh my God. Yeah. It was unbelievable.
I know.
And what I loved working with you, Rick, and still do to this, why we're still here, we are almost 40 years later still working together and collaborating on things, is that in all honesty, and I've had the privilege of working with some uber talented people in my career. Yeah. Very fortunate.
Thank you, Andrew.
<you're> But I have to say, you are probably the only one that I connect with that we don't have to do a lot of explaining. We get it, right? When we talk to each other, we almost talk in pictures as opposed to words, because when you say something, I can see it clearly. You the way you articulate it, it just paints a 3D image in front of my mind, and vice versa. We've always been able to do that, and that's what's kept us together all these years. That and you work so well off the cuff.
Is Ricky right there. That is Dean.
Dean asked me And we're going to play, I'm assuming we're going to play some of these, Dean.
I have them on the board.
Dean asked me earlier on about, you know, because we did a lot together on radio for a number of years. People may not realize you also worked with me on radio. But you would come up with these little moments on radio where you would, just before we'd go to air, you know, maybe the day before, you'd say, oh, by the way, I built a couple of pieces that we're going to air on Saturday when you do the live radio show. And I don't think there was ever one that I listened to and said, no, absolutely not. Everyone was absolutely brilliant. And I didn't have anything to do with it. You just came up with this stuff and produced. Well, can we hear some of the Hans and Franz or some of the little pieces that
Rick, I've got came a couple good ones here.
All right.
Time once again for the Outdoor Journal radio show Nature Moment. This week, the mating rituals of the Canadian mallard duck.
Oh my God, that feels so good. Oh yeah. Who's your daddy? Oh my God. Oh yeah.
Oh damn.
And now, oh my. Back to the show.
Like he just,
that was good.
These things would just drop in out of the heavens, and they would.
What did the radio station at the time, Fan 590? Did they take offense to that?
No, they liked it. It was the only thing on the Fan 590 that had life. Had energy. I mean, and to this day, I mean, a lot of the guys that I talked to still from back then remark about those moments, special moments.
No, they're great. Just wonder sometimes, right?
And the part I have to come clean and throw right out there, those were 110% Ricky.
Oh, yeah.
Like, there was nobody else involved in those, from concept to production to narration. The voice was Ricky's as well, to the composition, to the packaging and the delivery. And back then, also, you were the technical producer of the show as well, right? So it was all Ricky, man.
And here, whenever I go duck hunting, I'm doing that. Quack, quack. Little did I know, that's a bunch of bullshit. That doesn't work with you know.
Who's your daddy? And then, of course, there was a series that you did. I think we have one of them, the Hans and Franz series, which became uber popular with the audience.
Franz, that was a good workout. You look tense.
No, Hans, I'm not.
Maybe a little back rub, some oil.
Hans, it's okay.
Here, I picked out some music for you.
How about something a little less relaxing? How about the Outdoor Journal radio show?
Ooh, I love these guys. Hey, guys, you look a little tense.
This stuff was brilliant, man. I used to laugh when it
came out. Oh, no kidding.
Because a lot of times when they first played, I didn't hear. I heard them with the audience.
Right. I was going to say that'd be the best moment if you didn't have to hear them ahead of time, so Ricky could throw it at you and surprise you that Saturday morning. That'd be the best, right?
So how did these things come about, Ricky? What? Talk to us. Let us in on the secret. How does this stuff happen?
Well, it's really just like you said, it's listening to you, and you were working out an idea of what the Outdoor Journal radio show might be. And it wasn't just fishing or it wasn't just hunting. It was appealing to sort of the outdoor adventurist, for example, and someone who is maybe athletic or out in the outdoors, which could not be further from you, Angelo. So
thank you, Ricky.
That was a dig on you because, out of frame is like a Starbucks latte, you know, just out of frame sometimes.
A lot of times in frame too nowadays.
Yeah. So we've got this this mystique around outdoor adventure. So I picked up on a few themes. Hans and Franz was my play on sort of like the Telmark skiers, the adventurers out in Switzerland that are just conquering the world. And that was a play on that. And if we have a chance, of course, there's our Australian adventure.
Oh, that's we got to play that
coming
one.
Up as well. So maybe if it's queued up, we can listen to the Outdoor Adventure from Australia. And again, that's a play off of you, Angelo. I'm basically making fun of you.
Thank you.
Good day. I'm the Alligator Hunter. On today's show, I'll be exploring the outback of Australia and visiting a highly possessive family of freshwater crocodiles. Look, there's a pack of them now. And I'm going to sleep them tonight. Ah, she's eating me alive! All right, here we have the Venezuelan anaconda. At over 45 feet long, it can swallow a cow. And I'm going to wrap it around my neck. Ah! Get it off me! All right, then. The Indonesian Komodo dragon. Its venom is deadly to any animal on the planet and could kill a man in 3 seconds. And on today's show, I'm gonna kiss it. Ah! My face is falling off! What a great show that was! And look at me! I'm still alive. Between you and me, I owe everything I know to the Outdoor Journal Radio Show. Till next time!
And I've been assured that is a horrible Australian accent. Wouldn't even pass for New Zealand.
It's not that bad. But you're close.
But that's what makes it brilliant.
Yeah.
Those pieces.
I got enough moments to make it funny.
Same with the Hans and Franz thing. It was close enough, but campy enough that it just made the whole piece fantastic. Yeah.
Is there Pedro Piranha? Is there Pedro Piranha one?
I got him too.
I want to hear that.
Hey, I'm Pedro the Piranha, and I love Canada. Hey, you, get out of my way. But I'm not terrorizing young, plump, fair Canadians. I'm listening to the Outdoor Journal Radio Show. Hey, sweetheart, come over here.
So racist. It's horrible. But this is a good example, though, of how I would pick up on something, Angelo, that you would maybe mention. Yeah. And if you recall back in the day, I don't even know when this was originally recorded, someone in Lake Simcoe had released a bunch of piranhas
That's
in the lake.
That's it. Right. That's it.
And this was one of the news stories of that week. So I just picked up on that and created this.
Do you know
Mexican piranha terrorizing plump, young, fair Canadians?
I think one of the best pieces you ever did, unfortunately, we can't find, and I know you've looked as well.
Oh, I know you have.
It was for that year, that episode was the opening of trout season around the province.
Right.
And it was the week before trout season opened, and it depicted Hans going into a small little general store, complete with the little bell at the on the door, and trying to find a set of waiters.
Just waiters.
And it was just hilarious. But unfortunately, I don't know what happened to it. It just disappeared.
Yeah, right? I looked hard for that one. Like, there weren't enough floppy disks at the time.
How long did you, were you the technical producer on Outdoor Journal Radio? Do you recall at all?
Well, I mean, several years.
I know it was during the Barclay days, right? Because we were producing it up in the gallery up above the store, overlooking the store.
A few years for sure. Yeah, absolutely. We got our groove down and every Saturday morning. Fired all up.
If only people could have seen us behind the scenes for the inception of the Outdoor Journal Radio Show, because there we were. We knew nothing about radio. Let's be honest. We had a lot of Mickey Mouse little gadgetry and you know, equipment that we had cobbled together. I still look back at those days. How the hell did we even get off the ground? How are we today? Here we are almost 40 years later celebrating the brand via podcast. How the hell did we even get it off the ground?
Well, you know, my question goes back even further than that. When you guys were thinking, you and Reno were thinking about this, what made you start a radio show? And then why did you not do Fishing Canada Radio? There must be something to that, right?
So what happened was Glenn Goldup, who was a former NHL hockey player, got a hold of, and he was a Fishing Canada viewer,
right?
Got a hold of us. And at the time, the Fan was not part of Rogers. It wasn't even part of a network. It was a small little downtown Toronto station on Holly Street in the bowels of Toronto, little side street. And they had a sports, it might have even been, if I recall, it might have been Canada's first all sports AM station, but it was just a station, not a network. That's anyways, one thing led to another with Goldie. And I know if there's anybody listening to this from those that era, will probably say, well, how about me? I was involved in that. But unfortunately, I can't remember. There were several other people involved. But they said, hey, why don't we do? You guys are really good on the show for television. And I think we could translate that to radio, but we'd like to expand it beyond, right? Right. And we had just finished coming off of, or maybe we were still in the midst of doing Outdoor Journal television
right.
at the time. And we said, well, why don't we do it as Outdoor Journal and just make it radio? And okay. they said, yeah, that'd be a great idea. And that's how we made that transition. But the original Outdoor Journal radio show, I'm thinking for the first year or two, was hardcore fishing.
Right.
Right. And we just slowly expanded it to more of a general audience. Yeah, right. Yeah, yeah. It was originally fishing. But, but because we knew that eventually we were going to get away from just fishing. And because we had Outdoor Journal television, either running parallel or was at the end of its run with CBC, maybe I'm thinking that at that time. We said, let's make an Outdoor Journal. And that's how that whole. And then, of course.
Didn't say why you started a radio show. You didn't say why.
Because Glenn Goldup approached us and said, hey, I think you guys need to be in radio. Okay. Glenn was the ultimate salesman, as you probably knew later Glenn. On. You met
good.
Him.
Yeah, Goldie. Yeah, he was good. Yeah, you're right.
For those of you listening, Glenn Goldup was. I know he's going to hate me if he's listening to this. He was a right. Turn it backwards. He was a right winger for the Los Angeles Kings. That's where his career started in the NHL. And then it was relatively short-lived, and he went on to sales, which most professional hockey players at some point do turn into salespeople. Yep. And then he was ended up with this little obscure little station called The Fan.
Right on.
And that's how this whole...
Goldie. Good guy.
Oh, my God. We've spent some time with him out in the water. And he's
he's a character.
Quite the character. Great stories from him, too. But, And Ricky was working on the Fishing Canada show at the time when this all started. So he didn't have anything to do with his Saturdays and weekends. So I said, why don't you do the show? All right? That's how it... all came to be. And here we are now, like I said before, some 40 years later talking about it. And that's great because it's been a wonderful, wonderful, wonderful ride.
If anybody remembers the ice fishing animation that we did at Christmas time, Rick did all that. That was a classic that we keep reusing every year. We use it and everybody comments on it. Everybody loves it. That's a Rick Delishny right there. An original Rick Delishny.
We interrupt this program to bring you the much-anticipated bonus code for the latest Fishing Canada giveaways. This week's code is YURT. That's Y-U-R-T, all capital letters, YURT. Just type that in the bonus code section of the contest and receive 100 free entries towards all our current giveaways. For those who haven't entered yet, what the heck are you waiting for? Head on over to fishingcanada.com while you listen to the rest of this episode. Click contests and sign up for all the latest Fishing Canada giveaways. And now, back to the show. Correct me if I'm wrong. We've just touched on, I don't know, four or five professions and or areas of expertise that most people would die for. But I really think that at the end of all of this, because I personally know that at one point you had expressed to me this, you really wanted to be an animator full time. Like that's what you wanted to be. You wanted to be one of those guys at Disney. And if I'm not mistaken, you either applied for it or you were talking to me about it. Twice you applied for it. There you go. I remembered. Yeah. Twice you applied to be an animator at Disney.
At Pixar, yeah.
Yeah.
I got two rejection letters. Up on the wall, yeah.
No kidding.
You got
back in the days of mail. So, absolutely.
But why would they, just quickly, Rick, what was their excuse? Because in our opinions, you were the best of the best. What was their excuse that they use on you? Would they just say, no, we're full, but we don't have
room
for you?
You know what? It's the industry. The industry, I would consider myself in the animation world a generalist. So you could come to me with an idea and I'd be like, oh, it's going to look like this. It's going to sound like this. We're going to light it like this. It's going to have this pace. And I'm going to edit it like this. That would be the role of a generalist. And certainly with Pixar and with video game development too, you have these specialists. Like a good friend of mine does teeth. He models and animates teeth and mouth shapes, and that's his gig, and that's all he does. And if you can watch, paying attention to the interview and with Angela going over my past 20 jobs, and we're still going to talk about a few new jobs, like I couldn't.
Wow.
Professionally, they don't really look for generalists like me. They look for specialists who could do something.
Cool. And I guess there was enough information in the application that you would have sent them for somebody to read through that and say, you know what, this guy would not be happy doing what we need him to do, and that is be one-dimensional and just specialize in
Specialize. Yeah, whatever, that'd be fair right? to
say. And, and you always portrayed yourself as the guy who – and that's what I loved and love about you is that I don't have to – like you come complete with water. I don't even have to add water. You come complete. The package just needs a place to sit.
Not only that, Rick actually shot some Fishing Canada shows for us. He was the cameraman.
Well, I'm getting to that.
Oh, you weren't there yet.
I'm getting to that.
I was going
to
say, you people have seen his work that way too.
Well, okay. The Lord giveth and the Lord is going to take away.
Okay.
The Lord is going to take away here in a minute.
Oh my God. But, poor Ricky.
You are you're a one man show, and that generally is not what these animation houses are looking for. They need a team player who knows his one spot of expertise, his one area that he excels in, and then it's a handoff with the other members. In your case, you don't even need those other members, and that's the difference. And so that's you would think that would be a good trait to have, but maybe not in that field. But it is a good trait to have as far as I'm concerned, because, man, the stuff you know, we're just trying to remember some of the stuff you came up with and sort of touch up. We haven't even scratched the surface. It's, I can't think of, and Rick, correct me if I'm wrong. Did we ever disagree on a piece that you did? Did we ever look at it? And I don't remember ever poo-pooing anything you did.
No, I think you gave me pretty much. You pretty much gave me the keys to the what do you call it? You know, castle. You know,
yeah.
I had license to. And no, I don't. I think I think you and I would butt heads all the time on certain, in the approval process, finishing things off. Sometimes we would disagree, but it would always work out. And to your credit, you were usually right. I'll admit that.
Thank you, Rick. I appreciate that. So Pete mentioned about field work. So as you were working behind the scenes all these years on the Fishing Canada show and on Outdoor Journal, we did have one big falling apart on Outdoor Journal. I haven't decided whether I want to mention it yet or not, because it might have no relevance on what we're doing today. But as you were seeing this from the backside, your interest or curiosity peaked about the front side, and Pete just mentioned that is field work. And for one reason or another, it just never worked out until one day, I think it was the perfect storm. All of the stars were aligned and the planets and whatnot. In other words, our cameraman got sick and we needed Rick to come out in the field with us. And
I'm thinking the only shoot I remember Rick shooting was Lake Westlamcoon.
That's it.
Is that it?
There were two guys. There were actually two.
What was the second one?
I shot a good portion of the kids.
Right.
Your kids.
Yeah,
grandkids.
Yeah. The very first right. kids. Yeah, the kids
not, episode. Not the whole show. I picked up the slack. I think, there was something happening where – we needed someone to finish that show.
Right.
Yeah, and I think it was the same season where you dragged me out only for Westlamcoon, which is about
it's not that 10 far
minute drive that way from where I'm recording right now.
That's right.
North of Bancroft.
Yeah.
You gave me that whole show and I really enjoyed that. That was fun to do. And
do you remember we broke down right in the middle of the lake? We had the boat half apart, rewiring the boat and all that. Oh my God.
And I'll tell you what I find interesting is like, I knew I'd be editing this show. So I'm always shooting for the edit. Right.
Right.
And, so the boat died. You've got sponsors. You've got like, you can't show a boat dying on the water. I'm like, no way, man, I'm going to record this. Cause you know, I'm the editor on this, and that ended up that moment where Pete, you hotwired it wasn't the trolling motor, you hot or the actual motor.
Yeah.
That from ended up
trolling,
in the show
from and the trolling motor batteries.
That's what happens in the field, and that's what's great about about sort of unscripted television, which Angelo, you were a, really a pioneer on that. Yeah. And you're doing that today, this unscripted sort of drama that unfolds that, you need a good editor. You need a good editor. And I always tell the joke, they like, Rick, do you ever wonder like who would play like you in the movie of your life? And my answer is always the same. I don't care who plays me in the movie of my life. Who's the editor?
That's right. That's going to make all the difference in the world.
Hey, the price of boats right now, if I could hotwire boats nowadays, we could make some money, couldn't we?
Make some money, no kidding. So you had a brief encounter with the outdoors in terms of shooting it. You went back indoors and never to be seen again outdoors. But my question to you is, with that brief time that you spent there, if you could redo the whole thing over again, would you be outside doing the field production or inside doing the post?
That's a really good question, because I'm always doing something out of doors. The thing that I love doing is mountain biking right now. Like whenever I travel the world, I was at a glamping convention in Colorado just a few months ago. And, you know, I rented a mountain bike and I was biking top of a mountain outside of Boulder. I was in the Isle of Man doing some work out that way, and rented a bike and went through, they're called the plantations forests of the Isle of Man in the Irish Sea. So I do spend a lot of time out of doors, try to keep active, and try to balance the work that I do in sort of, you know, working in technology as well. So to answer your question, I mean, it would be difficult for me to pick only one. I'd need to have my probably foot in both
areas.
Yeah. Which means what I'm working on right now. So,
well, you know, that's what I want to get to now, which has all led you to where you are today, aside from still being deeply immersed in production, a variety of different areas in production, including ourselves. You've been working on the Roland Martin show on our behalf for the last little while. That is an outdoor adventure in itself, right?
It's just an adventure, a total adventure, that one, for sure.
I'm happy to help you, Angelo, because if I didn't do it.
I always tell people when I tell this story about how Rick has gone from that very first day that I met him some 40 years ago, he's gone full circle and climbed up that ladder. Today he's working on Roland Martin. That's a big deal, right?
Hey, by the way, Ricky,
it's a great show, and he has avid fans. He's a legend.
He's a legend.
It's a real privilege to be the guy behind the scenes on the Roland.
There's
Martin
only
show.
Been two editors that have ever worked on fishing with Roland Martin. Two. You're one of them.
Wow.
There you go.
Look at you, Ricky.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. Wow. His previous editor worked with him from day one. They were kids.
He got sick or something, didn't he?
They worked together right from day one, and until he became ill. That's Bo, who's his name.
Yep.
Right. He was the only editor that ever touched fishing with Roland and Roland show. So, you were traveling in very, 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 very narrow margins there, buddy.
I saw it, Rick. I saw it on Sportsman Channel the other day. It looks really good, buddy. The final product on the television. I just got the end of it. Looks really good. So there you go.
Well, what did I say? I don't care who's playing your life. Who's the editor? That's right.
Has anybody been more influential than, I have to ask, in the fishing community in terms of production and post-production than their very own Ricky Delishny?
He's a North American specialist, isn't he?
I think
absolutely.
So.
Absolutely.
Which brings us full circle as to why you're here today. So for years, as you remember from the radio show, I used to always have this little joke about yurts.
Always.
Right? I always used to say, I dream of one day being able to produce this show. I want to come to you live from a yurt somewhere, because I just love the word yurt. and lo and behold, here we are. We're going to talk to you about yurts, but not just any ordinary yurts.
An ordinary yurt is a rounded tent, isn't it?
Yeah,
a
basically.
It's not squared off. It's just a rounded tent.
I believe it came originally, the word was used to describe the Mongols.
It's a Mongolian-Serbian
thing. Mongolian-Serbian thing, right?
Kazakhstan, okay.
So here we are now. today we're going to talk about yurts, but a little more up to date. We're going to call them glamping yurts. Take it away, Ricky. What's the business you just started?
Oh, hold on. Let me just pull down my my background here.
Let's if you would. There you go. Thank you, Ricky.
I love it. That's awesome. That is awesome, buddy.
Now he's in a yurt, just the way I always wanted to be.
Now I'm in my glamping dome. So what we're building up here in Maynooth, just north of Bancroft, is a village of glamping, of geodesic glamping domes, similar to what you're seeing on screen right now. So these are four-season, fully insulated, air conditioning, ice machine, latte machine, hot shower, porcelain toilet, like a proper
porcelain toilet, Mr. Bowman.
I like the latte machine myself, to be honest. I'll go to the shit house if I have to, but for a latte, that's no problem.
You got it, Pete. No, but this is the reason why we're doing this, and my partner Jen and I are we have some land up here north of Bancroft, and we're right at the intersection of B106E. One of the main snowmobile trails and ATV trails. And then the spur that heads off to Maynooth, which has, among other things, butter tarts and the LCB. So we're right on the corner, the intersection of that. And we've got several acres that we've been rezoned. It's been approved for accommodation use. So these domes are similar to what you're seeing on screen right now. They're just over 500 square feet. Wow. They're two stories.
Two stories.
Two stories.
Wow.
They sleep up to six people. And like I say, they're fully air conditioned, heating, radiant heating under the floors, plus whatever else we could pack into it. A full kitchen and a beautiful, absolutely stunning bathroom.
So, okay, you obviously you have electricity. I'm assuming you have electricity, or is there some way else you're running it on, propane or something else, or is it electricity?
We've got an excellent supply of hydro here. So we've got 220 lines running out to the domes, and they're going to run the heat pumps air conditioning and the on-demand water heaters. You see, the snowmobiling community here is huge in the Bancroft sort of Hastings Highlands area. There are some beautiful motels, some smaller hotels in sort of north of Peterborough and then through Bancroft. And then there's really nothing. There's a handful of hunting camps with no water, no hydro. I'm generalizing, it's pretty rugged. And then when you get to Whitney, of course, you have some accommodations at the gate of Algonquin Park.
True.
And we're right literally in the middle of that. Yeah, thank you. Exactly.
Is the Maynooth Hotel still operating?
It's now called McAlpine House. It's a B&B right across from the train station.
That used to be the best. Okay. Stayed there a few nights.
Oh, I know what you're talking about. So Aaliyah runs the Airbnb. You're thinking about the Arlington, the big purple building.
That's
right
the one. Downtown. Yeah. The old Maynooth.
That place is so just beautiful.
We used to use it as our drop-off point going into Algonquin Park. We would generally overnight there and have jugs of beer. Because we were going into the park, right? And in most cases, we would go in with no beer. So you had to kind of fill up. That was the tradition. You had to kind of overdo it going in so you didn't miss it as much when you were there. And then, of course, on the way out, now we're hurting big time
for beer.
So we would overnight again. So it was a regular stop. So you're not far from there, huh?
No, in fact, that's one of our selling features. And the community is very small and everyone is aware of what we're doing here and we're providing something different. But that spur road I mentioned for the LCBO and the butter tarts, that brings you right to the Arlington and you got an amazing pub with pizza and it's really good. The guys that run it are just fabulous. So I'm really, really happy to be a part of this community. Maynooth and Hastings Highlands, does have a reputation of being this quirky, artsy, but very, very friendly community at the gateway of one of the most spectacular provincial parks in Canada.
So I think when you're launching this?
Right. So we were zoned just last month in January of 2024. So when the snow melts, we break ground. We've got all our contractors all lined up. Everything's ready to go. So we'll have the first dome up and running. Let's say early summer. My dream is obviously to have it open for May 2-4 weekend. So that's our goal. Nice. Nothing wrong with having a goal.
Nope.
And then once that's built, we'll shake it down. We'll get because we're going to do a DIY. We're doing a lot of it ourselves. And then once we get that working, we're opening up a second dome by the end of the summer. And then once that happens and it's churning and we have our snowmobile crowd coming in the winter, this time next year, we'll have two more domes. So a total of four domes that sleep up to six people per dome.
Is that your, is that the only room you have for, or you've got room to expand upon more if you want?
Oh, we've got plenty of room. So the dream is we've got this huge forest, and we didn't even talk about my time working for the Disney company. So I have a flair for theatrics. So we've got this, this forest that we're going to light up as our, I call it our enchanted forest. So we're building a 2.1 kilometer loop. That's a hiking loop that's available during the day for light geocaching for the kids. And there's some really spectacular, we call them, these rock features that in all over Bancroft. So we'll build a walking tour around that. But then at night, we're going to light up the forest with some pretty spectacular lighting. That'll be a wave two, maybe wave three thing, but we've got the land. And then once we have this land sort of mapped out, we'll be putting some more family, maybe A-frames. Although what I really want to put in are these, this new technology. It's these mirrored homes. Imagine like a storage container, but instead of metal walls, they're one-sided mirror, two-sided mirrors. So when you're walking in the forest, you don't actually even see the building. Until right on it.
Oh, that's true. Reflections and all that going up.
That's right. It really confuses your eye. And then, but the path leads up to like this. What are you walking up to? And it's the door, and you're inside. And then you're in a, like a studio apartment with all four walls minus the bathrooms are all transparent. It's a forest. You're literally living in the middle of Algonquin forest. With no bugs, but you'll have running water and the whole thing. So that's down the road. But the geodesic domes are a sure thing. The snowmobilers, the ATVers really want a choice for something, again, a little more luxurious. It's called glamping for a reason. Yeah. They want something a little bit better. They want to bring their spouse and you know have a home base that's not a hunting camp without. And again, nothing against honey camps, but it's an alternative to what is out here right now.
Ricky, we're talking to Rick right now in the winter, in February of 2024, the mildest winter we have all experienced in Southern Ontario. How is the snow up there? Is there snowmobiling going on in Maynooth and Bancroft and all that right now?
It's very sad. Everybody is hunkered down. It did rain last week, and there's this glaze of ice over everything. We're now at zero today after 4 days of 6 degrees. So, and this is devastating for the Bancroft area because it is a heavy, there's a lot of snowmobile users up here, and the trails here, especially where we are literally right here on a north-south intersection, it goes to Algonquin Park and as far as Peterborough. And then you go east-west all through Halliburton and Muskoka and the other way to Barry's Bay. We're right on that corner, and we haven't heard a snowmobile in 2 days. It's really sad.
Wow. Come on out of the dome there, buddy. You're giving me, I want to be in there crawled up in that blanket right behind you. Come on out of the dome for a second.
Come back. We're back in a minute. Here we go.
So it just dawned on me. You're talking about this new glamping concept and the domes and all that is perfect for every other outdoor pastime except the one I think that's going to be the most important in your business, and that is the angler. Because I'll tell you right now, anybody going into Algonquin Park and coming out of Algonquin Park, this should almost become, through time, a staple stopover.
Like your what you were just talking about before, your hotel stop.
Exactly. Yeah.
Because we're literally only a half an hour from Whitney, which would be the east gate of Algonquin. Right. And we are building, with the domes, of course, they do have full kitchens. We're also building a common cooking area outside. So for fish cleaning, we could do that outside in this common area. And then we've got a big fire circle. Designed for the center of the compound. And finally, we've got parking for six trucks with trailers.
I think the only thing that's missing from that concept, from that idea, would be the Fish in Canada show to come up and experience that. Mm-hmm. And maybe see if we can't capture that moment that we always strive to.
Not only would I want to have you guys up for sure, but all your listeners. Once we come up and running, I'm sure going to be able to squeeze a plug in, but you know me, I'll try as many chances as I can. The Maynooth Station Lodge.ca, sign up. And then right now we're just taking sort of pre-registrations. We're not taking any money right now, but to our listeners, let us know on the forum that you heard us on the show and we'll get as many anglers up here as possible. I'm really excited to explore that.
The area that Rick's is perfect. Those that don't really know, I mean, most of the people in maybe Southern Ontario would know the area, but that Bancroft area, Maynooth, and that and towards Algonquin Park, the kind of a north and east of us right here. Caledar is not far from there. Yep. There's all these, it is primo fishing in that and hunting too, for sure. I mean, the deer hunters, et cetera. But for fishing wise, and I mean, for a couple of couples, let's just say to me now it makes sense. If me and my buddy wanted to go fishing for 2 or 3 days, we bring the boat and the trailer up. The wives want to go up, but they don't want to go fishing. They got this beautiful little accommodations they could stay at. You got so many lakes you could go out on a daily basis.
Yeah, West Macoon, of course, we talked earlier.
Yeah.
We got Kamenetsky Lake.
Yeah.
Papineau Creek for
trout. All these lakes are
While you and your buddy are out fishing, your wives can be entertained by Ricky Ricardo, as we used to call him.
Yes, sir.
He'd be more than happy to show them around the area.
You just wanted to say that, didn't you? Hello, ladies. The boys are gone. Rick, here's one thing you're going to need for fishermen. You're going to need outdoor 110 volts to plug in boats for batteries. You going to have that?
Yeah, we're going to be running 220 to the domes, and then we're going to have plenty of outlets.
Perfect. Of power. That's all a guy will want for his boat right there, bud. That's it.
Mm-hmm. Nope, absolutely. I'm with you on that.
I just dawned on me that we're going to have to give you a whole new handle because you mentioned DIY. You're building some of this stuff yourself? You're working on
I know my limits and I play within it. So, I mean, we got contractors lined up for the trench work that's going to happen to run the four season water. And also the foundations for the dome are critical because these are massive. Yeah. These are 8 meters wide dome.
Holy crap.
Yeah, they're big.
They're 550 square feet, 8 meters across. And 24 some feet high. So we got to get the foundations right. And we're putting in radiant heating as well. So it's got to be right. And then at that point to hand over the actual domes themselves with a couple of people and Pete and Ange, I think I might have you guys come up. A couple of people can put it up in 2 or 3 days. They're pretty straightforward. They're Lego at that point. It's what goes inside. And then of course the interior design, we've got some vision of what we're going to make it look like. And if you've been on our site, we've spent quite a bit of effort already on sort of the marketing and the color schemes and things like that. So that'll project as well.
What's going to be on the second floor? You said there's two floors. Is there going to be, what's on the top floor?
It goes over the kitchen and washroom, and that's two double beds within a loft with a ladder that goes up to the top for the kids more people.
That is cool. What a great idea.
From award-winning animator to accomplished producer to
a cameraman that Andrew didn't really like his work that much.
It was okay. But, he was all right. But, to a technical producer of award-winning radio programs. It goes on. And now he's building a whole outdoor community and doing some of the legwork and manpower work involved. You are truly the Renaissance man now, officially. I'm going to call you the Renaissance man.
I need a nice scotch or something.
There you go. Ricky, tell folks once again how they can get a hold of you and get more information on this wonderful project.
Well, thank you very much, Ange and Pete. Thanks for inviting me on the show. This is so wonderful to come back and connect. The Maynooth Station Lodge, we're across from the old Maynooth train station. It's maynoothstationlodge.ca.
Perfect.
All our socials are lit up, and I have to give a plug to Jen, who's done an incredible job of curating our TikTok feed. I never imagined I'd be on TikTok. I didn't think I fit the demo, but it's astonishing. The demo of our viewers is 40 to 60, predominantly, like right down the middle, male, female, and we have well over 200,000 views on our videos already.
Excellent.
And,
nice.
Good for you.
And at 150,000 on one of the videos that sparked a little bit of a conversation about the animosity or the ATV riders on snowmobile trails. We touched on that a little bit, not knowing how volatile that was, but boy, that really lit up our social. So we're on TikTok. Maynooth Station Lodge for sure, and all the other socials. But
excellent.
Yeah, and then if you're interested, sign up, and we'll just put you on the guest list for when we start taking reservations in the spring.
Wonderful sharing a little time with you on a platform that we've never really done before with you, and that is interviewed you. We've always worked with you, and by the way, for those of you listening, Rick still works on the Fishing Canada show in various areas of it this year, including this year, I was going to say, an actual episode that he did from start to finish.
Correct.
And it will be labeled as such. Do we remember which episode that was? Anybody?
Episode 4, yeah, I believe. Episode 4. My working was episode 4, yeah. Okay, it aired perfect. A couple weeks ago, actually.
Yep.
So you're still right. Very much involved in the Fishing Canada show that he helped us all put on the map. And we thank you for that, my friend. And we thank you for your friendship. And we will enjoy in your success coming up in this new venture, I'm sure.
Well, thank you so much. I'll let you guys know, of course, when we're up and running.
Perfect.
Thank you, Ricky.
Thanks, Ricky.
Take care, buddy.
Good luck, buddy.
Rick Delishny, one of the, I said forefathers of the Fishing Canada show, because he was there.
Who were the three others?
Brent Levictois. I know you're being an asshole, but I can always outdo you in that department. Brent Levictois was the original. I think Todd Monroe would have to be considered in that bunch as well. Rick Delishny and Joe Gorskowski. I think all four of them, in terms of from a technical aspect, really gave life and birth to what we today take, for example.
Sure.
Right?
And they, that did, is they all did a good Canada job. Brand.
They all did a great job. Absolutely outstanding. Ricky's
fun guys.
Additional involvement, of course, was in the Outdoor Journal radio show or TV show, which gave birth to this podcast. Yeah. So he's kind of been along for the whole
everything.
Trip.
That's all we can say. That guy did everything for this company.
And we've had our differences. I know it sounded like a little love fest there.
Oh, you and Ricky had some battles.
And we had kumbaya moment there. Yeah, but Ricky and I, as much as we
cage magic
are singular in our... from a creativity standpoint, but we had some differences for sure. I was going to bring one of them up, and then I thought better of it.
That might have been some good podcast right there.
I know.
No, I get you.
I thought, let's tell you what, if we have him on again, which we should, once he gets...
once we stay in one of his yurts.
Right. Once it opens and maybe we stay in one, we'll... actually, what we need to do is get up there, stay in one, and get them all liquored up one night. And then get the cameras rolling, and then I will bring up our little
fist fight out in the bush. You guys be walking that 1.2 kilometer trail. They're chasing each other. That'll be a cartoon right there.
Anyways, that was great. Hope you enjoyed it. It was obviously a great moment for us to, you know, just sit back, take a deep breath, and walk down memory lane.
Yeah, with, and hopefully people look at Maynooth Station, Maynooth or Maynooth. You can pronounce it either ways, but Rick said it's pronounced both ways, but Maynooth Station Lodge.
I don't want to understate how important that is going to be for the fishery in that area.
Yeah.
Because in as much as, you know, we mentioned the Maynooth Hotel and all that, there's very little infrastructure up there. This looks like it's much needed, mm-hmm, and it's going to work out really well.
Yeah, excellent.
That all right, I want to remind everybody that these wonderful, lovely garments that Peter and I are wearing are available on the shop at fishingcanada.com.
Give me a hell yeah.
Thank you. Thank you,
Stevie.
Along with a multitude of other garments that will be available as well, depending on when this airs and when you're listening to it, you might also be able to buy the stuff at the Sportsman Show in Toronto. Because we will have a booth there.
Whoa, you're teasing a little bit.
Well, and the reason being, I just want to throw this out there. If this does air before that event, which I believe it's going to.
Oh, God, it better.
Anybody that is within shouting distance of the GTA that has been complaining about the shipping charges on the internet, not just on our site, just internet in general, this is your opportunity to say, there you go, internet shipping charges. I'm going to walk right into the Toronto Sportsman Show this year, and I'm going to pay zero shipping charges on that's a bullshit T-shirt.
Give me a hell yeah.
That's right. Wow. And the lovely Fishing Canada.
A quarter zip. Very comfortable.
Full hoodies, track pants, track suits,
lots
t-shirts,
of hats,
different colors, hats galore.
Fishing hats.
Zero shipping charges. That's right, baby. And that are it for us on behalf of the entire crew here at Outdoor Journal Radio, the podcast of OVA over there. Nick actually have a headset on. Look at you. You look lovely.
It's a bunch of bullshit.
And over there, how do you know it's going to be a bunch of bullshit?
You got a headset on.
Oh, that's true. Dean Taylor, the producer of this very program. He's Peter Bowman. I'm Angela Viola. Thanks for joining us, folks. We'll catch you next time.